Welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. I appreciate the time that you take to listen to what I have to say. It means a lot to me. Please go to covertnerd.net for all the other episodes and the show notes for this episode. And without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up. We are here with Jeff again from the Make Eternia Great Again podcast. And if you've listened to previous episodes, you know Jeff has been on multiple times. Always a good time
talking
with Jeff about nerd stuff.
That's right.
So it's one of the few times with us having tons of kids, we just get to sit and be giddy little boys and talk about
be kids ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're going to talk about 80s arcade machines. But first, we're going to do a little bit of trivia. Last time I got to ask Jeff the question, so this time we're flipping the coin and we're going to have him stump me with some arcade questions.
That's right. So again, I was kind of telling you when we were sitting down that some of these are probably kind of easy. Some of them are a little bit tougher. So we'll see. We'll see how good you are. Because so, I know, like, if I was just throttled with a bunch of questions right now, like, really deep, what year did,
you
know, like, it would be hard for me. So
play along at home.
Yeah, so play along at home. All right. So I got 10 questions here.
Oh, boy.
All right. So number one, there was a game released in 1981 that was unusual in that it did not include shooting or killing as the object of the game. The object was to just cross a road and avoid being run over or eaten. What is the name of the game?
Frogger.
Bingo. Nailed it.
All right.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, getting across the road. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Warming up.
Warming up. There you go. Number two, which game featured an orange character hopping on a pyramid of cubes?
Cubert.
Very good. Number three, if I am using a rollerball as a controller to try to fight off insects, which game am I playing?
Centipede or Millipede?
Centipede.
Okay.
Yep. Good job. Millipede probably be... Because Millipede came after Centipede. So
both Millipede was the sequel.
Sequel. So both be acceptable. All right. Number four. What arcade game has you building hamburgers while being chased by a hot dog, a pickle, and an egg?
Burger Time.
That's right. Good job.
We'll talk about that.
That's right. Number five. Which game featured a knight riding a flying ostrich and allowed cooperative play with another person?
Joust.
Good. Yep. So now it's going to start getting a little bit tougher.
Okay.
All right, which arcade game allowed you to get on a motorcycle and use it as a controller?
Super Hang-On.
Yeah, yep, that would be number
two. Hang-On.
Hang-On.
Okay,
very good.
All right. Yep.
Good.
Half a point,
yep.
I guess.
You got it. You had Hang-On in there. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Number seven, which game has you controlling a spacecraft down a three-dimensional tube destroying your enemies? So it's like the one where you're like flipping around. There's like the triangles and stuff coming at you. And
I can visualize some of it in my head. That tube. I'm thinking of, it was a Super NES game, but I know this obviously isn't Super NES. It's an arcade. I don't know. I'm stumped.
Starts with a T.
Not Tron.
Nope, not Tron.
Yeah.
So it's,
I don't know.
Tempest.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit harder.
Yeah, okay.
All right. This is a little bit kind of an easy one, but which arcade game first introduced the character that would eventually become known as Mario and its sequels?
Oh, okay. Mario Brothers.
Okay, but before Mario Brothers.
Donkey Kong.
Very good. Yep.
Okay.
I was like, I think you probably know
this one. Yeah. Donkey Kong, yes.
All right. So these last two are a little bit tougher. So which of the following was one of the first run-and-gun shooter games?
Run-and-gun shooter games?
Yeah, where you're like basically running around and you're shooting stuff.
First one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably talking early 80s.
Yep.
You're running around and shooting. So you're talking a character? I mean, you got Space Invaders, but...
Yeah, this would be like a character running and shooting.
I don't know.
It's pretty obscure game. It's Frontline.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Never heard of it.
Pretty obscure.
Okay.
All right. So then last question. And now for the granddaddy of them all.
Okay.
This is a question about Pac-Man.
Okay.
All right. It was developed by Namco in Japan, but which company was the United States distributor of the game?
Of Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Was it Midway?
Very good. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You nailed it. That's good.
Those
good
are some job. Good questions.
Yep,
I love
you
that.
So awesome. Good job. So you got
I think I got an 8 out of 10. 8 7 out of 10. 10.
Yep. Good job. Like,
hey, I passed.
You passed.
That's
right.
All that matters.
That's you get to keep your nerd card.
Oh, phew. I was worried there for a second. So
you are running a podcast about nerdism.
Yeah, so. I can't not have a nerd card.
That's right.
Otherwise, we'll have to shut this
well,
whole thing
sorry,
down.
Sorry, guys. Last show.
We'll have to shut this moneymaker down.
That's right. That's so funny.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Jeff. And if you haven't listened to the Make Eternia Great Again podcast, definitely check it out. Eddie, Carl, and Jeff. It's a MOTU podcast. I'll have a link in the show notes so you can go check it out. It's
yes,
a fun show.
Please do. Yeah, we have a blast doing it. We're currently making Eternia great.
That's right.
So it's fun.
And we'll plug the mini comic that just came out last week. So depending on when you listen to this, the video is already up on YouTube, and I'll include a link in the show notes for that.
Yep.
You can go to the Make Eternia Great Again Facebook page to get a hard copy if you want to.
Limited supplies, yeah.
While supplies last, so.
Yep.
All right, let's dive into 80s arcades. We got three picks. I picked three. Jeff picked three. Let's just go ahead and start with yours, Jeff. You
okay.
Do your first one.
Sure. So my first pick, going right for the gusto here, first off, this was tough.
Yes.
There are so many awesome games.
Yeah.
Like when we first initially talked about this, we talked about like just in general.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then you suggested we should probably streamline it down to arcade games.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good idea because I had so many awesome games on Intellivision. We didn't have Atari. We had Intellivision.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But just on Intellivision alone, there was like a ton of awesome games, you know, mm-hmm. and some of those were not arcade games. Some of them were strictly for Atari or for Intellivision and stuff like that. So,
well, then I think we said arcade games and there's so many. Then we went to 80s arcade and there's still so many.
There's still so many. Exactly. So it was really hard. And I think, you know, we'll talk about the honorable mentions, you know, when we're all done here. But so my first pick was the amazing game right at the very tail end of the 80s. It was called Golden Axe. If everybody remembers this game, I hope you did. I hope you remember playing it because it was super fun. But so it was a side-scrolling arcade beat-em-up game released in 1989 by Sega. Makoto Uchida was the primary developer of the game and also was responsible for the creation of Altered Beast. The game places the player in control of one of three warriors, each bent on revenge against the vile dictator Death Adder. Death Adder has taken over the once peaceful land of Uria and murdered their friend and partner Alex. Several ports of the game are created, most notably for the Mega Drive, Genesis, and Master System, and then several sequels followed. So the game focuses on three heroes. One of them is a battle axe-wielding dwarf, Gilius Thunderhead, from the mines of Wolud, whose twin brother was killed by the soldiers of Death Adder. Another is a male barbarian axe battler, wielding a two-handed broadsword looking for revenge for the murder of his mother. And the last is a long sword-wielding Amazon Tyrese Flair, whose parents were killed by Death Adder. So progress is made through the game by hacking and slashing your way through Adder's forces. Aiding the characters in this quest is their ability to cast spells that hurt all enemies on the screen. The force of this magic depends on the number of bars of magic power currently available. The bars are filled by collecting blue magic potions found throughout the game. The male warrior Axe, limited to 4 bars, is able to cast earth spells. The dwarf Gilius, limited to 3 bars, casts lightning spells, and the female warrior Tyrus can cast devastating fire magic, but her most powerful spell costs 6 bars. So I have a whole bunch of information on each of the characters, which I don't think we need to go to.
Nah, I'll include it all in the show notes.
Exactly.
So if people want a deep dive, they can.
Yeah, but what a freaking cool game.
It is. It has that D&D kind of feel to it.
Yep.
And has your typical... three different characters that have different power sets.
Right.
I'm curious to know what was kind of the fun feature. I mean, there's lots of different features,
for me,
but what kind of caught your eye?
So first and foremost probably is the graphics.
Yeah.
The graphics to me were just incredible on that game.
Especially for 1989.
For 1989, it was really, really good. And you could tell Sega was just really killing it at that time. You know, they were doing great. But the graphics were cool. But then I don't ever recall being in a game that you could... like hop on another player, essentially. And so they had those dinosaurs
dragons and stuff
that you could get on. And I was like, oh, man. You know, it was, to me, that blew my mind. I think that was the first experience I ever had, that you could be walking and then you could get on one of these things and then use that as well as a weapon. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it was incredible. But just the sounds of it, the intensity, the visual aspects of it, like, I spent so much freaking money on that game. It was ridiculous. I just remember going down to the 7-Eleven.
I was just going to ask, where did you play this at?
It was 7-Eleven over by, I say over by our house. It was a little bit of a trek, but my brother and I would ride our bikes down there. We'd buy a couple packs of Big League Chew.
Yep.
Or maybe some Hubba Bubba. And we just sit there and just play that. We'd
dump
so many quarters in that thing. Because, like, you know, that was back in the day where if you were good at a game, you could ride a quarter out quite a long time, you know. But if you weren't good at it, it ended really quickly.
Yes.
And so I remember with Golden Axe, it was like that. And it was like, man, I was like dying like so quick, you know, because I was pretty young. And I was like 10, 11 years old when that came out. And so I just remember like, man, I want to get good at this. I want to get good at this. And eventually I did. You know, it was like all summer long I was in there as many times a day as I could.
As much money as you had.
I just remember that feeling of like riding my bike. Yep. And you just have like that smell of the asphalt outside of the 7-Eleven.
Because it's probably summertime.
Summertime. Okay. It's like so hot and you're just cooking and like the sun hurts and everything. And then you go into that, like, it felt like it was 50 degrees inside that 7-Eleven. It felt so freaking good. You could smell all those smells of like the fruit, you know, like the slushy machines and all that crap. And you just like walk over and get that great Big League Chew. And I just sit down and just start plugging quarters in that Golden Axe, man.
I'd be there for hours. Was that the first time you played Golden Axe?
That was the only place I ever played Golden Axe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was that summer. And I bet you I played. It felt like it was every day, but it wasn't. It was so probably a couple times a week.
When you first saw it, your eyes were like, what is this?
Right. Yeah. Because I forget what game it was, but like I went there and I remember I was watching my brother play a game, and then like off to the side was this new Golden Axe game, and I was like, and it just, I just remember like the demo stuff or whatever, it was pretty quiet, and then all of a sudden it would be like, rah, 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 like make these noises. I'm like, what the heck, you know. And so finally I like went over and I'm like watching it. I'm like, no way, like it's like you're playing a cartoon, you know. And so I was like, okay. And I'm pretty sure it was like 50 cents to play, and a lot of the games in there, it was expensive. Most other ones were 25, and I was like, all right, I'll try the 50 cents and see what happens. I like died immediately. I was like, oh, but man, it was cool, you know. But then I was like, I have to get good at this game because it's super rad.
And as a listener, if you don't know, this is back in 1989. So the best graphics we had at that point was NES and Sega Master System.
Correct.
Which were not even close to the good sound and graphics that you had on Golden Axe.
No, and then we didn't get... I'm trying to remember. We didn't get our NES until, oh man, I think it was 91. So it was a couple years later.
Kind of late in the game.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, and so
I understand.
Yeah, and like my dad had just lost his job and stuff, and I remember like we had not necessarily complained, but it was like, hey, all these kids at school, they all have this NES and everything. And they're like, well, how much is it? I was like, it's $100. I'm like, oh gosh, you know. And I just, my parents, that Christmas that I got it was funny because it was like, me and my brother were so bad at like trying to find toys and everything. I mean, go to our Make Eternity Great Again. You'll hear all about how I like ripped into toys and stuff as a kid. I have a number of stories about finding my He-Man characters early. But anyways, so we were those kids, you know, trying to search it out and everything. And I remember that particular Christmas, my parents were gone and my brother and I like were searching all through the house. We ended up finding a black garbage bag in their closet up above like one of the shelves and stuff. And it was a box, and like we slid the plastic a little bit, and you could see like the orange gun, because it was like the orange and gray, the zapper. And I was like, oh my gosh, we got an NES, you know. But then it was like, this is like November or something like that. I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to wait like 2 months before we can play it. And that was the only gift we got that year was the NES, you know. And my parents were like, okay, you have to understand, we scrimped and saved all year long so you guys could have this and stuff. And it was a blast. But anyways, sorry, I went off on kind of a tangent there, but you're right. right, though. So yeah. At that point, all I had ever had was Intellivision. And so I'm used to Asteroid and, you know, just these little, like, one-bit games, you know, almost in, like, Pong, you know?
Yeah, Breakout.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so it was, you know, gosh, when you went there and saw that. I mean, it was one thing to be playing, like, Pole Position or something where, it felt almost 3D-esque, you know? But then when you saw this and you're like, oh, it's not just a side scroller left to right. You can move up and down and all this other stuff. You can jump. You can get on to other things. You can cast dragons. Lightning.
Yeah.
You know. You
use the dragons to breathe fire.
Yep, exactly. Oh, my gosh. It was so cool.
One of the features or little sequences that they had is when you were at the camp and you're sleeping and you get up and you have to kick the little gnome.
That's right.
To get your potions. It's hilarious.
As it is in real life.
Yeah. Don't you kick your gnome to get potions?
Oh. Yeah, oh my gosh.
That was just a fun little vignette or whatever you want to call it that you put in there. And the game really wasn't, I mean, it was hard, but it really wasn't that long.
No, it wasn't.
Because I remember playing it and you could, depending on how good you are, you could spend maybe $5 at the most and probably get to the end.
Probably, yep.
But you can adjust that too. Nowadays where you have the emulators, you can go in and didn't realize that the cabinet owners, you can turn difficulty up or down.
Exactly.
You can make it really hard and make kids just dump quarters just dump in quarters it. In. Or you get frustrated and you quit.
Right. Yeah, I think it was probably either I was really bad at it or or they had the setting set up.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. Yep. But you don't have any online site to go to figure out cheats or strategy guides. Your strategy definitely guide not. Was your buddy.
Exactly.
Hey, you try this.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Cool. So, well, good first pick.
Yeah.
So my first pick is Pac-Man, which, and as we were talking earlier, that it's not necessarily the most fun game I've ever played on an arcade, but it was the first game. So I guess
it's so iconic, though.
Yeah.
I mean, who hadn't ever played Pac-Man in an arcade?
Exactly. You see it, and I'll get to it later. But you hear that.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what that is.
Exactly.
Even. Probably an 8-year-old now still knows what Pac-Man looks like. Yep. He's just so ingrained in American culture that you know it.
Oh, absolutely.
But came out in 1980 and was released basically like your question that you had. Namco was the one that made it.
Yep.
But it also was brought on to about every platform you can think of. And I have them there in the show notes. But you got Atari 2600, which was a horrible iteration of it, but still on there.
Yep.
We had it on a home system on the Atari 5200. But I first played it at a Godfather's Pizza, and I think I couldn't remember if it was 81 or 82. But just like you, I was like, what is this? This
right.
Look at the graphics on this thing and the sounds. And
the colors were so cool.
Yeah.
You go such a contrast. Yeah.
And I think the reason it caught on so well, too, is its simplicity.
Yes.
You don't need any instructions.
Yep. Left, right, up, down.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. It's not hard.
Yep.
In fact, Nolan Bush, or the guy that created the Atari, I think that's his name, Nolan Bush, but he was big on, he didn't like instruction manuals in the games, and he didn't like instructions on the arcade cabinets. He wants the game so intuitive and so easy to run that you can just walk up to it and play it.
Plop in a quarter and start going.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, the instructions I heard on the Star Trek arcade game was step one, insert quarter. Step two, destroy Klingons.
Nice.
That was it.
That's it.
Trivia there. Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs both worked for Nolan, and that's where they all got that concept of keep it simple and intuitive.
Yep.
But so that's where I first saw it. And I lived in a small town in western Nebraska on the farm. So I couldn't even hop on my bike and go to the 7-Eleven. Sure. So my only exposure to arcade games was going to Godfather's very rarely.
Right.
Or going to, every once in a while, we'd take a trip to Lincoln and go to Showbiz or Chuck E. Cheese's. And your mind would just, at least for me, mine would just explode because here's 30 arcade cabinets all over the place. Yes. He's like, what do I do?
Yeah.
You get frozen. And and like you, we didn't have a lot of money. So you go to the change machine and put your couple dollars in. And then you kind of scout around. Okay, where do I want to put this? I want to make this.
When your dad's like, this is all you get. You're like, oh boy.
Yeah, you're begging.
It's like
you scrounge up your own money.
You're putting in your firstborn son the first time you click in a token, you know?
Exactly. So you get, at least me, I was strategic. okay, I browse the showbiz or Chuck E. Cheese. Okay, which one do I want to play? And kind of figure out which one I want to do first. Oh, that looks kind of easy. It looks kind of fun.
Yep.
And you try to strategize. But anyway.
Oh, man, showbiz.
Yeah, showbiz pizza place. Yeah, it used to be.
That brings back memories.
Yeah, yeah. You probably went to the same one I did in Lincoln. But
no,
but,
we had one in Omaha.
Oh, okay, did they? Yeah, okay, okay. Yeah. Ours is sorry. Lincoln when we went on rare occasions.
I didn't know that Lincoln had one. That's
yeah,
crazy.
They did back in the 80s. Then it got bought by Chuck E. Cheese and became Chuck E. Cheese. So. But yeah, Pac-Man was at Godfather's. The guy that came up with it in Japan wanted to try to create a video game that he might get women to play, and he couldn't think of anything. But so he went to the cafeteria and got a pizza, you know, a little mini pizza, took out the slice and saw the Pac-Man form factor. And he's like, oh, how about something like this where he's eating dots and stuff. And that's where he came up with that. And it huge, huge, huge seller, $14 billion in revenue.
Jeez.
As of 2016, most recognizable video game character in North America, which surprised me. I thought it'd be Mario, but it was Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Is the most recognizable.
Gotta be close. It's got to be close.
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah.
The advantages that it did have is since it was such a basic design, it only took up 24 kilobytes of space.
Oh my gosh.
If you think about that. That's hardly anything.
More than 24 kilobytes.
Yeah, yeah. Text emails.
Yeah, text emails. Yeah.
There was also a cartoon.
Yes.
I mean, they merchandised the heck out of this thing.
That cartoon was so good.
I know.
Good.
Oh, so you watched it too,
I love that
huh?
cartoon. Oh my gosh, yeah. I loved it.
You had the bad guy had like this metal over his face or something. He was bald, and I don't remember his name.
Oh my gosh, I love that cartoon.
But hilarious.
So much.
And then they did a computer, a CGI one back in 2013 on Disney.
Yeah, my kids watch
that.
My
kids
still
too.
Watch it. Yeah, yeah. I think it's on Netflix or Amazon or something like that. Yep.
And you had so I guess the concept, sorry for the listener, is the little yellow Pac-Man goes around, eats the pellets. You get the power pellets, which allow you to eat the ghost. And the goal is to get all the pellets off of each level. And as you go further, each level gets a little bit faster, a little bit harder to do. And that's kind of the whole, there is the point system. That's it. There wasn't levels back then. It was points. That's
correct.
That's what got you the high marks.
So obviously, and I know like some people like Eddie, he's not a big fan of Ready Player One, but I learned something about Pac-Man and Ready Player One that I didn't know. If you read that book.
I read the book, but it's been a while and watched the movie.
So basically I didn't realize that there was like, I don't know, it's obviously not codes or whatever, but like certain moves or whatever that you could do to help you win the game. And that's how people figured that out, was that I guess there's a spot right below. So like the window or whatever, or like jail or whatever you want
where
to call
the ghosts
it, the
come
box
out.
Mm-hmm. Where they come out. So right below that, or I think one step below that, there's like a line or something like that. And if you sit right there, the ghost will never get you.
Really?
So if you need to like take a break or something like that, you just go and you can sit there and they'll always avoid you and stuff.
I did not know that.
Right. And so I guess there's like, as the levels get harder, if you go and you wait there for a couple seconds, the ghost will shift over here and then you can go and do this and you come back. And so you can use that little like safe zone, I guess, to kind of help you beat the game.
Really?
And so, but there's certain maneuvers and all this other stuff that, you know, like, have you ever watched the movie Pixels?
Not yet. Adam Sandler. I saw the preview for it, but
you
I never watched.
Movie.
Is it good?
That's
okay.
Good. Yeah,
okay.
It's really good. It's pretty clean too. You know, so
my
kids watch it all the time. It's pretty good.
Okay.
There's a couple scenes they're like, eh, but it goes over their heads. So, I guess there's a handful of games back in the 80s that had little tricks and little Easter eggs and stuff that you could do, you know, to help you win the game.
And so again, nobody would know that.
Correct. Yeah, it was just word of mouth. Yeah,
or at least I may have forgotten.
Right,
maybe
and I want
did.
To look that up.
I might try that.
I want to look it up. I guess there's some tricks with Pac-Man that you can that's how people beat it. Because I'm just like, I played that game since I was a little kid, and I've never been able to get past like round
horrible.
Four.
Yeah, yeah. I was never a good video game player. Period. But that one, I don't know. I just
but it's
couldn't.
So much fun though. You know,
it's simple. And even today, if I see it on. Maybe if somebody, I think we have it on, I think they compile like some of the old games onto a disc, or if I see it someplace, I'll sometimes just play it just for the heck of it.
Heck yeah. Yeah, because then you always do good round one.
Yeah.
Like, I murdered that one, I get it.
But there's 200, I guess we'll skip to that. There's the high score, I think there's 256 levels.
Right.
I struggle with level 2.
That's right. Well, that's what I was saying. I think it's like, there's like certain maneuvers and stuff like that that you can do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
Because a world record is 3 hours and 28 minutes and 49 seconds with a possible maximum score of 3,333,360 points.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That is insane.
When you have the ghosts are trying to get you. And so I'll just run through them real quick. I didn't know some of these, but Blinky, the red ghost, after eating him, he takes you on the shortest route, but immediately follows you. Inky's the blue ghost, is unpredictable and dangerous. Pinky's the pink ghost, and he likes to take you on roundabout paths to surprise you. And then Clyde not only breaks the rhyming game, he's the last ghost, and he's orange and the least threatening. He often just kind of wanders off and doesn't really do anything. But he's on the Disney movie Wreck-It Ralph. He's the villain.
Right, yeah.
So, but that's him.
That's funny.
So they all have kind of their traits that kind of mix it up a little bit. Excellent game. I guarantee you people, if you're a listener and you haven't heard of Pac-Man, what have you been doing?
No kidding.
But just an excellent game just because it was the first. And I think that's what makes it so iconic too, and the fact that it's still around and people know it.
Right.
So it wasn't just a flash in the pan and
you're exactly right. I think that there, and maybe this is just me, but you know, I do the same thing with music too. There's like trendsetters, you know, that come along that completely change the game essentially. And then all of a sudden takes off in another direction. And then years later, there'll be another one and it takes it off and stuff. And I think that Pac-Man for me in the video game world is probably number two. Yeah. I think that the first one was probably Pong.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I think that kind of started it all.
It did.
You know,
it did.
And then everything was very similar to Pong, just, you know, one bit, you know, little things, real binary. And then all of a sudden, here's this thing with color and it's, you know, simple, but it's got cool noises and cool music. And, you know, but again, it's really, really simple stuff, but really, really fun. And I think that, again, they set a trend
in
a lot of people try to emulate Pac-Man. You know,
it's a cultural phenomenon too, because you had, I don't know if you saw these, but Pac-Man watches.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, and the Pac-Man joke books.
Yeah, I mean, I used to have, and the funny thing is, like, I had this little yellow handheld game.
Okay.
And it was made by Midway, and that's how I knew that question, by the way.
Ah, okay.
And but it had like a little screen on it that was maybe 2 inches tall. And so, like, it was a yellow disc, and then it was, like, flat, and then it kind of, like, angled up, and you have a little bit of a screen, and then the back end would bubble down. So it was, like, this really fun. It felt good in the hand.
Yeah.
That's a joke we say on Make It Turn It Great Again all the time. But the game felt really cool in your hand. And but you would actually, on that screen, you would play Pac-Man. So it was a real small.
Oh, yeah.
But it was actually color, though.
Oh.
So that little screen actually would light up the red cherries and the red strawberries and stuff like that. But I just remember turning that thing on and
the music,
you know, and I'm like, oh man, you know. And so I would just play that for hours on end.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a simple game. You just play it.
I would love to find that little handheld game.
Oh, you don't have it anymore?
No, no.
You probably go to Pop Culture Exchange.
Yeah, maybe I'll talk to Candy down there and see if he sees one.
Or you can go on eBay.
It's probably worth like $1,000 now. I'm like, oh, man.
Man, our nostalgia is expensive.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they merchandise the heck out of that. Oh, so merchandising. Spaceball quote.
Yep,
so can't go an episode without a Spaceball quote.
That's right.
All right, what's your next one?
Okay, so my next game would be Outrun. Outrun, to me, was so wicked cool, and I'll talk about it in a minute here, but it probably changed my DNA at that moment the first time I played that game. But anyways, I'll get into it in just a second. So Outrun is an arcade game released by Sega. Again,
another Sega game
in September of 86. It's known for its pioneering hardware and graphics and innovative features such as non-linear gameplay and a selectable soundtrack with music composed by Hiroshi Kawaguchi. Designed as a racing game where the goal is to avoid traffic and reach one of five destinations, Outrun was set up for players to enjoy the experience of driving. Outrun is a 3D driving video game in which the player controls a Ferrari Testarossa Spider from a third-person rear perspective. The camera is placed near the ground, simulating a Ferrari driver's position and limiting the player's view into the distance. The road curves, crests, and dips, which increases the challenge by obscuring upcoming obstacles such as traffic that the player must avoid. And the object of the game is to reach the finish line against a timer. The game world is divided into multiple stages that teach that each end in a checkpoint and reaching the end of a stage provides more time. Near the end of each stage, the track forks to give the player a choice of routes leading to five final destinations. The destinations represent different difficulty levels and each conclude with their own ending scene, among them the Ferrari breaking down or being presented a trophy. So I have other stuff in there, but in the notes, but the coolest part, and if you can see it in the picture that I provided, I remember the first time walking around the corner and you see a video game, half of it's in the shape of a car. Yes. And you're like, what?
So you're sitting, just to give the listener, you're sitting down in a simulator, essentially, yes, with a steering wheel, and you have the brakes and the gas, I think.
Yep, yep. Yes. Yep. You got brake and gas. And then I think there is, if my memory recalls, I think there was a low and a high gear, maybe, or okay, that might have been pole position. I don't remember.
No, it probably was this one. I'm guessing.
Think it was, but I'm probably wrong. There's probably people freaking out, but I just remember the first time I played that game, I was like, this is my life. Like, I don't want to do anything else besides play this game.
Because this came out in 86, and 86. Golden Axe was 89. So, okay, so you played this before Golden Axe.
I did, yeah. Okay. So I was 8 when this came out. Okay. And I guess,
Where was this one at?
So this one would have been Showbiz. I think that was it. I think, okay, I only played it at Showbiz. And I went to Showbiz a couple times. We went there, okay, for our birthdays a couple times, yeah, and stuff. But so I never really got really good at it. But yeah, it, like I said, it like intertwined with my DNA so much that like that is like my style of game that I go to now is car racing games.
Okay.
So like even the newer video games that are out right now and stuff, like so many people play like Halo and, mm-hmm, you know, all this other stuff. And I just can't get into it. And so funny story. So we had this work outing last year, and a lot of the guys that I'm in IT, you know, okay, and so we're all a bunch of nerds and whatnot, you know, but I'm one of the older guys, you know, and so they all bring their 360, their Xbox 360 and whatnot, and they bring just stacks of games and stuff. And so they kind of like do little tournaments and everything. And they're like, oh, Jeff, come over and play Halo with us. I'm like, man, I'm not good at this. Yeah. I got 15 buttons or something like that I got to deal with, yeah, or whatever. And it just feels like so awkward. And like, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And they're like, we don't know how to help you. You're just running in circles. And, you know,
you're not very good at this.
Exactly.
Are you?
I'm like, oh my gosh, you old man. And all this other stuff. And anyways, so I was going through and they had, oh my gosh, it's completely escaping me now. But there was, I have Fortnite stuck in my head. That's not right. But there was a video game, very popular car racing game, I'll just say, and Forza.
Okay.
And very, very popular game. And so they're like, hey, we're going to play Forza. And I'm like, okay, I've never played this before, but I've heard about it a lot. And I've always wanted to try it. It's very realistic car playing. So they fire it up and a couple of them play it and they're doing pretty good and everything. And I'm like, can I try it? And they're like, oh, here comes the old man.
I want
to try this, you know? So, well, one of these guys just happens to be like, he like ranked in the world in playing Forza.
Oh,
and
that was there?
Yeah, that was there. And he's got a full setup at home, steering wheel, gloves. He's got all this like different, you know, pieces that he's purchased online and built this amazing, you know, game playing experience at home. And he plays it all the time. And anyway, so he was doing really well, you know. And he was like trying to coach everybody, you know, like, oh, you know, you got to come around the corner like this. You got to do this. You got to feather it. You got to feather it, you know, like giving all these, like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So then I'm like, hey, can I play? And they're all like, oh, gosh, here we go. Old man can't figure out how to do Halo. Like, he's going to be able to do this. I sat down. I played on it once, and I did like a thing where it was like 5 laps, kind of like a test run thing or something like that, just trying to get used to it. And I did pretty good. And they're like, oh, wow, Jeff's pretty good at this. I'm like,
the old guy's pretty good.
Give me another chance. And they're like, okay. And so it's like I had figured it out, you know. And it's like, boom, just started going right away. And like my time was like right below this other guy.
The world.
Rolled, yeah. And so I'm like, wow, let me go one more time. And they're like, And so that third time I beat his score. And he's like,
that's
no
awesome
freaking way. He's like, I do this all the time. And I'm like, I'm telling you, all the games I play when I was, you know, a kid all the way up to now, I always do car games. I've just always, and then like I used to do amateur racing myself,
oh, okay,
and everything. And so I, you know, kind of helped. But again, it all started with Outrun.
With Outrun.
Like just that, like I said, that third person point of view, Like anytime I play like Gran Turismo or anything like that on PlayStation, stuff like that, you can choose like if you want to be in the car, you want to be, and I'd always put it so it's just like an outrun. It's like that third person, just in a perfect spot, and I just crush it. So anytime I'm like in the car or whatever, I don't do as good. And it takes me a little bit to adapt to it.
Oh, okay.
And
that's that third person.
But if I'm outside of the car, it's like I can do it perfectly. And
it's
so
like Mario Kart?
It's like Mario Kart, I do really well. Yeah,
exactly.
I do very well, but yeah, I love that game. It, like I said, it just completely intertwined with my DNA, and I love playing car racing games.
Well, it's just a fun game. It's a kind of a California type game. It's Pole Position on awesome steroids. Right.
Yes. And Pole Position was my first race car game. I was really little when I remember playing that.
That came out early 80s.
Yeah. So I was like, I think that came out probably like 81.
Something like that.
Because I was really little. I was probably like 4 the first time I played. That was when like the tabletop games were really popular. Mm-hmm. And, still kind of coming out of the 70s a little bit. And I remember seeing Pole Position. I just remember being a little kid just spinning that wheel.
Yes.
And it's like, whee!
Yeah,
you know, woo-hoo! And stuff. And then finally I was like, Dad, can I play? And he's like, sure. So I put it in there. I was all over the place, just smashing and stuff. But man, I just had a blast, you know. So Pole Position started it. And I remember playing that a whole bunch when I was young. But when Outrun came out, it was like, oh man, this is incredible. Like just the fact that you could change the music.
Yeah, and, I was just gonna say you can change the music, which you probably like that.
Oh yeah, and then like when it would crash, the car would flip and stuff.
Yes.
And, oh man, it was so
sometimes
cool.
You're like, I kind of want to crash just to see that.
It was so.
This was probably, since you're a sit down, it was probably $1 or is it 50 cents? I bet you.
It was up there.
Because anytime you had those extra accessories,
extra features,
whether it was a steering wheel or the racing games, hang on. It was always 50 cents.
Yeah. It could have been $1.
Or $1.
It could have been, depending on where you're going.
That was like a sticker shock back in the day when it was 50 cents. Oh, my gosh.
That's crazy. Yeah. Now you go to like Dave and Buster's and it's like $2.25 to play a game or something like that. You're like, ugh.
Yeah, we're showing our age.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of an outcry, and I'll get to that in one of my picks about the cost there. But, yeah, Outrun was just a fun kind of California feel to it. And
super fun.
And you get to the end, and you get your little trophy.
Driving a Ferrari, like your Magnum PI or something.
Exactly. But
oh, man.
I saw here 30,000 cabinets were sold by 1994.
Yeah.
So it was 8 years, and it was still running, and it sold that's a lot of cabinets.
It is. Well, I mean, you got to think about it. I really believe, and I could be wrong, because again, this is a long time ago, but like, I don't remember anything between Pole Position and Outrun. There might have been other car games, there probably were, but Pole Position was a stand-up game. You know, you had to stand awkwardly and play with the gas pedal and stand, you know. And Outrun's like, oh, you can sit and you're comfortable and it feels like you're in a real car almost. And you know, and so I really think that it just blew up because it's like, I mean, it was probably one of the first ones that used fiberglass in such a way. And it kind of like Hang On, you know, the motorcycle game again. It was like, this is like it's a simulator.
That was Sega's signature at that time
because
they did Super Hang On. They did Afterburner where you had the stick.
Yep.
They did Outrun and they had two different versions of Outrun. They had the stand up one.
Yep.
And then they had the sit down one like you did.
Yeah. And I bet you the sit down one was the one that they sold the most of. It had
probably.
To have been.
Probably.
Had to have been. What a draw.
Oh, awesome game.
Yep.
All right. Well, my next pick is the game Gauntlet.
Yes.
So a lot like Golden Axe, but this would have been a predecessor, but it is a four-player, kind of a D&D fantasy version where you pick four different characters, and each character has their pluses and minuses. So you have Thor, the barbarian, so to speak. You had the elf, or let me get the names here. Oh, Quester, the elf.
Yep.
Merlin, the wizard, and Thyra, the Valkyrie.
Yes.
And each of them had their pluses and minuses, so they kind of balanced out. Thor was really slow and really poor at using magic, but his axes were to kill everything with one shot pretty much.
Right.
Quester, the elf, was really quick, okay at the magic, but his firepower was kind of mediocre. Merlin, the wizard, was really good at magic, so his magic would clear everything off the screen.
Yes.
But he was kind of slow and his firepower wasn't the best. And then Valkyrie was kind of in between on everything. She wasn't real fast, wasn't real slow, and just kind of in between on that. But you could play four at a time. And that's where we kind of mentioned earlier that the arcade or the game makers were trying to figure out a way to generate more revenue without raising everything to 50 cents because they were finding, like we just said, a little bit of sticker shock.
Sure.
You know, your kid don't have a lot of money. You only got a dollar in your pocket.
Yeah. It's one thing to go from like 25 cents to 30 cents.
Yeah.
But from doubling it, like 25 cents to 50 cents, it's like, what?
Exactly. And so this is a way that the creators came up with was let's have four players simultaneous play and you guys can work together and get through these mazes. So for the listener, if you haven't played it before, you start out at a starting point and you're trying to get through this maze and there's evil characters like ghosts and what they're called grunts is some of the other characters.
Yep.
Demons. And they all those enemies are generated by these monster generators, so they just keep cranking out enemies until you destroy the generator. And your goal is to get to the exit. But along the way, you're going to encounter food, you're going to encounter potions, keys to unlock doors, and you have to work together. But sometimes, and we talked about this, I talked about this one time with Lee Bachma, Art of Lee Bachma on Facebook, by the way. He said that when he would play with his friends, he always had the jerk guy that would go around and eat all the food, shoot all the poisons,
that's right,
or open all the doors and just screwed up for everybody.
My brother.
Yeah. And you're like, what the heck are you doing? Yep. But if you can work together. And now, I don't know who you played as, but I always played as the wizard because you get the potion and it just wipes everything off the screen. And so when you are in a bind and you just want to get through it, he can finally do that. So that was my favorite character. But Ed Log is the one that created it. His son wanted him to make a D&D type video game, and he couldn't figure out how to do it until he saw this game called Dandy on the Atari 800 in 1983. And so he kind of copied that, but later on he got sued by Atari because he copied it. So
that's
the old saying, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Right. That's right. Yep.
Kind of caught up with him. But this was ported onto a lot of different systems. He's always on the NES. Genesis had a quest mode that you can do.
Yep.
But a really fun game. I just, the most intriguing thing about it was, well, the music was good, but the robotic sounding narrator.
Yes.
You know, wizard needs food badly.
Right.
You're a brave soul.
That's right.
Try to get out of this. And I'll have a link in the show notes, but they have a YouTube video that has all the different sayings that the computer does on both Gauntlet 1 and Gauntlet 2.
That's awesome.
And you can hear all of them. It's like, my gosh, I forgot about this. But for the time, it was like, whoa, four players at once, and you have the actual voice and just these cool sound effects. And
you felt like you were getting your money's worth. You know, like you said, they had to go from 25 cents to 50 cents, but man, you really felt like you're getting your money's worth.
Yeah. Well, they were able to keep it at 25 cents.
Oh, did they?
But because they had four people at once, could potentially generate four times the revenue.
Yes. Yeah.
Because of that. So they're trying to get more revenue without having to raise the price.
Gotcha.
But it was just a fun game. We had this at a convenience store in the town I went to school at. And I remember seeing it for the first time. I was like, oh, crap, this is awesome. Look at that.
Yes.
And you're just trying to crank as many quarters in there as you can. You put a quarter in and you only have 600 health or 1,000 health, depending on how they had the settings. And it just keeps counting down. And as you encounter enemies, you keep losing your health until you get down to zero.
Right. Yeah.
And you can collect the keys. And
so that's definitely a game that no matter what, you're going to be putting in more quarters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and they also had a commercial for it where they did an animation, a little short animation drawn in the style of, say, maybe Thundar or something like that effect.
Okay.
And I have a link in the show notes that a YouTube video of the commercial. It is really kind of cool.
I'll have to check that out.
Because for 1985, it has this fantasy D&D type flavor to it. It has this villain, this grunt is what they called him, popping out. And the only one there is the Valkyrie, and all of a sudden the wizard and elf and barbarian show up to help her, and they start taking on all the different monsters.
Oh,
and it says, Gauntlet, at your local arcade or something like that. But
that's
little,
awesome.
Little animation is kind of cool.
Heck yeah.
One of the things that happens if you do wait 2 or 3 minutes, if you just sit there and don't move and wait 2 or 3 minutes, all the doors unlock.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's like an Easter egg.
Yeah,
That's pretty cool.
And then if you wait until you have 100 health, all the walls turn into exits, and so you can get out that way.
Wow.
Now, the reason they have that all the doors unlock is because some of the monsters can't get to you if the doors are locked.
Sure.
And so, obviously, then all the monsters find you. But we worked together on different strategies to try to get through. So we would say, okay, Barbarian, you go first, and the wizard will stay behind. And
will only open certain doors at certain times. And when you open the door, go around this way and we can kill all the ghosts right away. So there's a strat again, trying to make that corridor last as long as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Did you ever play this one?
I did play this one. Yeah. I didn't play it a lot. I'm sure I probably played it at Showbiz as well, but like you were saying, I think they had it like everywhere. I remember playing it at Hinky Dinky was our local store.
Yep.
I remember playing it there. I did play it a bunch, but I think it was because I was younger. So I would have been about 7 when that was out. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just too intimidating for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was still into the, you know, Pac-Man type stuff, you know, at that
simpler
time.
Simpler game.
Exactly.
And you collect treasures on it too and stuff. And there's a villain or not a villain, an enemy called Death. And you couldn't kill Death unless you had a potion or you have to hit him a whole bunch.
Yes, yeah.
And just a fun game. It's not it's a maze type game, so it does get in some ways a little monotonous.
Right.
But I think they flavor it up enough with enough different characters, and there's these little transporters that transport you to different parts of the maze, and it's just a fun game. You can hop
they
on
put a lot into it.
For that time it was pretty fun, and they've had lots of different iterations of it, so
I bet. Yeah,
that's one of the, and kind of what sparked this, I guess, segue here or sidetrack, sorry. I've always thought about getting arcade cabinets at some point in my life if I ever have the money, so I've always kept a list, and this would be one of them. If I ever had the money, I would definitely get. There's a guy actually in Geneva here that makes replicates of arcade games.
Cool.
So he'll buy the originals and then make exact duplicates of them. And he had one of these in his showroom, and it looked really nice. And
that's
it was
cool.
Authentic, but a lot of money.
A lot of money, that's right. I was going to say, our good friend Lee Bachman, he's got a cabinet in his house. But
that's where he got it from, the same guy.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, yeah. His had multiples, but he'll make
exact duplicates of old games.
That's cool. That would be one I'd want just because it has 4 players, so it's kind of a fun game. Guys can get around and just play it together.
Another one of our good friends, Carl Smith, so he makes like tabletop arcade games, and so he does those himself. And those aren't quite as bad. They're a few $100.
Yeah, those are pretty inexpensive. They just kind of fit on a table. So I guess, if you wanted to go that route, that's
not bad. But to have like a full-on cabinet. Oh.
Especially this size.
Like, I mean, I don't know.
Gigantic.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know how Lee ever leaves the house.
Like, I know.
playing all the time.
I would be.
It'd be
but that'd
crazy.
Be definitely one of them I'd get. You get your buddies together and go play some gauntlet. And I got screenshots in the show notes, so check it out. If you've never played
game.
It, find it. You can find, like I said, emulators. You can probably play them online. In fact, you can play a lot of these arcade games online.
Yep.
So, cool. All right, what's your next one, Jeff?
So this will be my last one. This was the mecca of all games for me. this game is Burger Time.
Okay.
We kind of talked a smidge about it in the trivia there. So Burger Time is a 1982 arcade game created by Data East, initially for its Deco cassette system. The player is Chef Peter Pepper, who must walk over hamburger ingredients located across a maze of platforms while avoiding pursuing characters. So this was kind of funny, but so it was originally made in Japan, obviously, and they called the game Hamburger.
Okay.
And so they were, when it got over to the United States, they changed it to Burger Time because they were afraid that they might have trademark infringements by calling it hamburger. I'm like,
really?
Who trademarked the word hamburger?
That's what I'm thinking. I didn't know it was trademarked. But
I didn't think you could.
Okay.
But if it is, that guy's probably making a ton of money. But anyways, so the object of the game is to basically complete as many hamburgers as you can. And then you complete the hamburgers by walking over the different ingredients. So there's like a top bun, a bottom bun, lettuce, tomato, hamburgers, or the burger itself. And then you walk over it and it falls down a level. But as you're doing that, obviously there's other enemies that are following you around. And there's Mr. Hot Dog, Mr. Pickle, and Mr. Egg. And so as you're going up and down these stairs or ladders or whatever they are, they're probably ladders. As you're going up and down those, they're also going up and down them. They're trying to come closer to you, almost similar to Pac-Man in a sense.
Sure.
And so you could do multiple things to those bad guys. You could, if they're below you and you walked over one of those patties or whatever, it would fall and it would crush them.
Because you crush the egg or whatever.
Yep, crush them and then they disappear. And then a couple seconds later, they come out from up above. Another thing is that you had a pepper shaker, and you could sprinkle pepper at them, and then they would like stun them, and they would basically stand there and sneeze for a little bit. And the third thing that you could do is if they're on that, you know, patty or whatever it was with you, if you went over it while they're on it, then they would also fall down with it.
Okay.
And so, and I believe that it would make them disappear as well. Obviously, I don't think it killed them, but I think it would make them disappear.
For a while.
And then they come back up from up above again. So, but there's multiple levels. Mm-hmm. It was always changing. You'd have this set here, and then it'd go to another set. And as you progressed, each level got a little bit more
faster and more enemies.
And then you get to a certain, like, however many screens. I don't know how many there was, probably like 8 or 10 or something like that. And after you get to that 10th one, it'd start back over again. But then now everything's like... Yeah. Double as fast, you know, and then you get through those 10 and then it starts back over. Now everything's triple as fast, you know, and it just, you know, I don't think there was a way to beat the game. I think it just kept getting infinite. Yeah. And I could be wrong on that, but yeah, so basically super simple game, again, very much like Pac-Man, where it was just like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how to play it. It's just a 4-position joystick and a button, and the button was for the pepper. Yeah, I think
you only had one button because it was
just
jump.
For the pepper.
That's right, it was the pepper. Yeah, you're right. Yep. Okay.
So super simple. They ended up doing so successful with it that they had different iterations of it. They had, I think, and I don't have it on here, but they ended up having, it was like an ice cream shop, I think, like Peter Pepper's Ice Cream or something like that.
That was a sequel.
Yeah, it was a sequel. And that came out almost immediately. I think was the next year they came out with that because it was so successful. And then they had like Burger Time 2 and, you know, they had like, I think 5 or 6 or more reiterations of Burger Time after that. But it went to all sorts of different.
Oh, they ported that thing to everything.
Oh, big time.
It's so simple.
Yeah, I played it first on Intellivision.
Okay.
And so I kind of cheated a little bit, you know, but I remember seeing that it was at 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven.
Yep. And I was like, oh, my game's here. And
they rotate at 7-Eleven convenience stores. They would just rotate them out every 6 months or so.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And so I remember when Burger Time was there, I was like, oh, I wonder if it's exactly the same. And it was actually a little bit more challenging, but I thought it was more fun because like you felt like you're more into it, you know? Sure. And there's just something about playing on a cabinet like that.
Yes, there's a different feel.
It is a different feel.
I don't know what it is, but probably some of it's nostalgia.
Right. It's got to be.
A little bit.
And speaking of which, something that's always bothered me is like I remember my parents all the time. Like if I was at home or whatever, sitting too close to the TV, I'm sure your parents were like, don't sit so close to the TV, you'll go blind or something like that. You'll hurt your eyes or something
hurt
like that.
Your eyes.
But then like how many hours did I sit in an arcade cabinet? Like you're literally at the exact same
6 inches a foot away. Yeah,
like,
I know.
Right there.
I know.
And like that didn't matter, but you know, at home it's different, you know?
Yes. Well, sidebar again, trivia on that. The reason they did that is I think I read that the early tubes in the 40s did give out some low levels of radiation.
Oh, wow.
Back in the 40s. But by the time you and I in the 80s, I did not.
Yeah.
They did not have that.
No, there's no
but
way.
But our parents probably heard that from someplace else, I guess. But yeah, no, Burger Time is a fun little game because, yeah, you can sit down in front of that cabinet and play it. There's no learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not. It's
simple.
Super. Yeah. And there's strategy to it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and the enemies were kind of, I think they're just as or a little bit more unpredictable as the ghosts were in Pac-Man because, like, you just never knew. Like, sometimes you could kind of fake them. Like, oh, look, I'm going left. And then they start going left, and then you turn back around and go right. And, you know, so there's a lot of strategy to it that I think was easier to figure out than, like, Easter egg strategy like Pac-Man would have had, you know. And, but, man, just such a fun game, man.
Well, in that Data East, I was reading on that cassette format that they came up with was pretty innovative at the time because the arcade owners could buy one cabinet, but it would play multiple games because you just put the cassette in, it loads the game, and there's your game.
There you go.
You don't have to buy a whole cabinet for
very
multiple
innovative
games.
Yep.
So for that time frame.
Yeah, that was that Deco cassette system. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, no, it was a good game. It's colorful and what a concept.
Yes. And then plus his name is Peter Pepper.
Peter Pepper.
And my older brother's name is Peter, and so call him Peter Pepper. He hated it, but it was fun. Good times at the 7-Eleven.
Loving it. Like these guys every day or went on every day.
Oh, but yeah.
When they come here, they play video games, yeah. They buy Big League Chew.
Well,
we
must have been the only kids. I don't ever remember being in there with other kids.
Really?
Like just, I don't know what it was. That 7-Eleven is no longer there, but I don't know if they just weren't that busy or what, or maybe we just came at the right time every single day or whatever, but we were in there all the time and we were the only two kids, my brother and I.
Jeff and Peter again.
It was like our own place. It was so great. Well,
that's
what's
cool. That's what made it kind of fun. It's like,
that's
our own little arcade.
Yeah, exactly. That's what started my introversion.
Just keep me in front of a cabinet.
Just give me in front of a cabinet at the 7-Eleven, my Big League Chew.
Give me my Big League
Chew. That's right. I'm good.
Oh, yeah. Big League Chew. That's a whole story right there.
Oh, man. So much fun.
Yeah. Anyways. All right. Last pick for me is Double Dragon. This came out in 1987. And this game has been ported to everything. And I have the list in the show notes. But one of the fun things about it is, again, it was at our local convenience store. Just like what you said, they rotated them out. And
right.
Got to play this, and I was like, what is this? It's a beat 'em up game. So, yep. Yeah, just to give you an idea as a listener, what it was is you had two characters, Billy and Jimmy Lee. Their girlfriend, Marion, gets kidnapped by the Black, by Willie, was the leader of the Black Warriors. There we go. Black Warriors gang, and held ransom because Willie wants their secret to their martial arts, and this takes place in a nuclear, post-nuclear war New York.
Right.
And they have to go and try to save her and get through all his thugs to get to Marion. So that's kind of the premise of the game. And you're fighting, you're punching, kicking, jumping, and getting through, beating up all these guys to get to the end. But they had an Atari 2600 version of it, and I played it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is atrocious.
Is it pretty bad? I didn't ever play it on that.
Oh,
so.
Man. You're taking a game and trying to play it on a system like that. But still, it's fun. They ported that thing to everything.
Yeah, they did. It was everywhere.
It's even on the Nintendo Switch. So yeah. Almost 30.
But it's such an iconic game, though, of that era, though. That beat 'em up. I think that was probably the first one, wasn't it?
That started, one of the first. Renegade was actually the first one, okay. But it didn't catch on. Double Dragon is the one that definitely started that whole genre.
Well, because I remember playing Kung Fu and stuff like that. Remember?
Yeah.
And it was, beat them up or whatever, but you're real limited to what you could do. And
this is
very linear. And this was you're going up forward, and down. Backwards. You can pick up bats and beat people with them and stuff. And
you could, as you're going through the different levels, you can pick up bats, you can pick up oil barrels, whips, knives, boulders, boxes, cardboard boxes, which is kind of funny.
Cardboard boxes,
you can throw a cardboard box at the guy and it knocks him down. We need to try that. I'll throw a cardboard box at you and see what happens.
And see, that's what's kind of cool about a lot of these games. Like, I barely remember what the characters look like and stuff, but with Double Dragon, I remember the bad guys, even what they look like. There's that big muscle guy that was bald and had the mustache. Bobo, that's right. Yeah.
And I have the pictures of him in the show notes.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So you got Billy Lee, who's the main character, blue. Jimmy Lee is his twin brother, but he's just in red. So it's the exact same character. They just skinned. And same thing with a lot of the other characters. They just kind of reskinned him, like the Abobos.
Yes, because he had
There was a green Abobo. It was kind of like the Hulk guy.
The Hulk guy, yeah.
And then you have Willie. But so to keep the size of the files down, they just reskinned him.
Sure.
And really not a lot of characters. But it was just so fun.
Oh, man.
And we would try to get, we'd work together. And so there was lots of strategy. Okay, you go over and beat this guy up. I'll beat this guy up. And then when you get to the end of the level, you always want to take your weapon to the far right of the screen.
Right.
Because then the weapon goes with you to the next
level.
That's
right. Exactly.
And that was crucial to this game.
Yeah, because he had the aluminum baseball bat.
Yes. I love that weapon.
Oh, my gosh.
And the barrels.
And the barrels.
You can kick
the
barrels.
That's right.
But the clincher on this one at the end, so spoiler alert, if you're playing two player, you have to fight each other at the end for Marion.
That's right.
Your girlfriend. If you're not playing two player, then you don't.
She
you
must be
Willie.
A good kisser.
She better be.
Brother against brother.
But I guess the names, they didn't come up with Billy Lee and Jimmy Lee until the Nintendo version came out.
Okay.
Before that, it was, let's see, Spike. Oh, yeah. Hammer and Spike.
Okay, nice.
When it came over from Japan, was Hammer and Spike. But they didn't come up with Billy or Jimmy Lee until the Nintendo version.
Because they're probably like, really? Hammer and Spike? Really?
Yeah.
How about Billy and Jimmy? Okay, that sounds better.
And then they changed the story a little bit from the Nintendo version that Jimmy Lee was actually behind the kidnapping and marrying the whole time. Because in the NES version, you only had one player.
That's right,
you didn't have two-player
options. That's true, okay.
That. So that's a little twist there.
This is kind of fun that you picked this game because another game that, and you might not be aware of it or whatever, that this is very similar to that. Probably, I'm assuming, I didn't do the research, came out after this. I'm really burying the lead here, but there was another game that was similar to it. It was called River City Ransom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, on the NES, yeah. Yes, very similar, but comedic of sorts. Like, their characters were very, like, South Park-y.
Yes. You
know, real kind of, like, fat and stubby,
kind of
exactly. And then when you would get hit, like one eyeball would be really big and like the other one would be really small, and you know, but very similar. You had chains and pipes and you know, different weapons and stuff that you could hit people with and throw them, and you could actually pick up the bad guys and throw them or use them as a weapon, you know, like beat them with and stuff. That River City Ransom to me was like such an iconic. I honestly remember playing more River City Ransom than I did Double Dragon. Yeah, because the comedic value of it, you know. Yeah. But it was cool because like you with that game, you could go into stores and buy food and potions and stuff like that, and you know, and help you get further through the game and stuff. And so, I don't know, super cool. But the graphics were very similar, like the backgrounds and everything. The you know, the controls are identical and everything. So I would imagine, I'd like to look into that a little bit further and see. I would imagine that River City Ransom came after Double Dragon because Double Dragon was so popular.
Oh yeah,
and so they're like, this is our version of it. Or if it was a couple of college guys or something like that, like, oh man, wouldn't it be funny if it, you know, and they did it. You know, I don't know. I'd like to find out what the story is behind.
I remember seeing River City Ransom. I never played it, but I remember seeing it. It was like, it's just a Double Dragon kind of knockoff that they just kind of turned it up to 11, so to speak.
They did, yeah.
And just made it funny and kind of comedic, like
so
you said.
So much fun.
Yeah. But yeah, we played this at the arcade, like I said, and tried to get through it. And you always did the elbow smash because I didn't know it at the time. We just kind of figured it out. But if you're facing away from the villain, they don't walk towards you. They're real sportsmen like that. They only attack you when you're facing them.
Okay.
And so you just face them until they get really close and then turn around and elbow smash them.
Okay.
And they stop moving and they won't attack you.
So we
figured out, I was like, well, this is an easy way just to kill all the characters. And I didn't realize that until after we played it.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah.
I was just trying to find that aluminum bat.
yeah, exactly. But again, you don't figure these things out. Like the weapons moving to the next screen, you know, the first few times you play, you don't figure it out. Then all of a sudden, on accident, you find it out.
I want to do that again and see if it works.
I didn't read it online. I just have to tell my friend.
I got to bring this cardboard box with me.
Exactly. And if you get to the edge, same thing when you're at some of those levels where you go down, you just go to the edge of the cliff and the bat or weapon goes with you down.
Right.
But yeah, this is one of the first games we got on the NES too, because we played out the arcade. Like, this is on the NES?
Yeah.
Got to get this on the NES just because we have the Double Dragon.
Such
the
arcade. And what a cool name,
dude. I know.
Double Dragon. Like, that just sounds, it just screams 80s.
Oh,
like everything was dragons in the 80s.
Yeah, the little garage door opens and there's sports cars right there. I mean,
correct.
Again,
it was so iconic.
And I guess on the WWF Superstars arcade game, when you're leaving to the right of the ring, I guess, Billy Lee is in there. He's in the audience watching.
Really?
It's a little Easter egg
cool.
The same company put that in there. So
that's
I thought
cool.
That was funny. But yeah, I have the list of the heroes and then the Black Warriors and just some pictures of the arcade screenshots and the cabinet itself. So check it out. So what were your honorable mentions? Like we talked before, some of the honorable mentions could be substituted.
Oh, man. On the right day, some of these would have been number one for me, you know. So my honorable mentions were obviously Pac-Man.
Yep.
You know, we went on and on about that. Donkey Kong.
Yep.
I loved playing that game, but to me it was just repetitive, but yet kind of hard. But I just loved how fun it was. Like, just, it was like cartoony and fun.
Yeah.
Space Invaders, which.
Oh, yeah.
How could you not like Space Invaders? Oh, my gosh. Q-Bert, to me, I played that really young at Showbiz. I remember playing that, and it was too hard. But I loved the colors on it and stuff, and I thought it was super cute. Pole Position, obviously.
Yeah.
We went into detail on that. Tron.
Yeah, because you love the movie.
Oh, my gosh. See, that's what I'm saying. The game was kind of tough. If it wouldn't have been as hard, it was a hard game. If it would have been easier, it probably would have easily been number one. Visually speaking, it was probably one of my favorite games, you know, of all time. But, man, what a cool game. I love Tron so much. And then probably one of the games that I found the most fun to play was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, the arcade one. Yeah, with the four players.
The four players, exactly. Again, graphics were similar to almost like Double Dragon and stuff, but I loved how you could do a like a super power move or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, oh, I played that game so much. Obviously, Frogger, I played a ton. Yeah. I love that game. I still, like, Crossy Road is basically Frogger, you know, like on your phone or whatever.
Again, simple concept.
Simple concept, mm-hmm. you know. Popeye. That was super fun game.
Yeah, it's a lot like Donkey Kong.
Yes, a lot like Donkey Kong. And I think that came out pretty early, too. It was like 81.
Yeah, it was maybe. Early. It was really early. Really early.
Again, for the year, the graphics were really cool in that game. It was super fun to play. But my two, and see, this probably would have been number four, number five.
Okay.
And again, on the right day, maybe number one, number two. But Ninja Gaiden.
Yes.
That game. Oh,
on the arcade?
Gosh, yes, yes, the arcade. Now, now I played the crap out of that on NES. Yep. So the arcade version, I didn't play as much because it was pretty hard.
It was.
But it was cool because, like, you could smash street signs and, and like, the characters are so, like, buff everything. And, oh, my gosh. And
the interactivity with your surroundings.
Yes, it was so cool. Like, you could jump on the buildings and stuff and then, like, the bad guys look like Jason from Friday the 13th and stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, so that game was incredible. I personally like the NES game better, but I would still play the crap out of the arcade game.
The arcade game, the
graphics
alone,
it was so cool. I beat the NES version so many times. I actually literally memorized every single move in that game. I played it so much.
You must have, because that game's hard.
It is hard. I would time myself to see how quick I could beat that game. I was so fast at it. It was Yeah, it was like my brother and I, we were trying to get it. Again, this has been a long time, but it was like we were trying to get it beat under 10 minutes, you know?
That's impressive.
So number two and number three were a lot harder, but number one, we had it down pretty licked. But so anyways, and then my last honorable mention, which was kind of a goofy game, but it was Captain America and the Avengers.
Yeah.
Four player game. Yep. Super fun. And I still to this day, every time I see a Dodge Avenger, I always yell out, "The Avenger!" Because that's what you hear that all the Avengers. Avengers. So it was always like Captain America. I think it was saying it was like, "The Avengers." You know,
who does he play as the most?
So I always did Iron Man.
You did Iron Man?
He was, oh my gosh. I mean, I do him or I do Captain America.
Yeah.
Like both of those guys, I think, were like the better of the two because like their weapons went further out. Because
they could shoot. Yeah.
So the shield would go out and come back. So you could basically hit a person twice.
And then
with the Iron Man, it was just like a laser and went all the way across the screen.
And just fried everything in your path.
Man, that was fun. It was such a fun game. And it was, you know, pretty simplistic, even though it was four player and everything. It's just flying around.
It's like the Turtles. You're just going around defeating the levels.
But the graphics, the music, it's just a fun game.
The Avengers.
Yeah, so every time I see a Dodge Avenger drive around, the Avenger.
Dad, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's just, we had that at the skating rink. I used to play it all the time at the skating rink.
Okay, yep. See, you always associate where you played it at with the game.
Exactly.
So would that be, if you had an arcade cabinet, that would probably be one of them?
That would be. Yeah, that would be. Yeah, if I had all the money in the world. Yeah, I probably have all these.
Yeah, I have a list of 10 kind of arcade cabinets that if I had the money, these are the ones I would get.
I would have Tron especially just because, like, dude, I'd use that as a nightlight. Like
you're wheeling in a Tron cabinet into the bedroom. You're like, what are you doing? Oh, it's our new nightlight.
This is our new nightlight. Like, oh my gosh, it was so cool.
Or if the kids say, I need a nightlight, daddy. You have this.
Yeah, exactly.
The dolly in Tron. That'd be awesome.
Oh, such a cool game.
Honorable mentions for me is Rarston, which is kind of a Conan type hack and slash. Yes. Operation Wolf, because you have the guns.
Yes.
It's always cool. Time Soldiers was a game by Sega. You kind of rotate the joystick
very
around. It's a
cool
little
game.
Different.
It's very cool. Game.
Yeah, it's different. Afterburner, just because you have the stick.
Yep.
Always cool. Rolling Thunder was an Atari side scroller, which I thought was kind of cool. Golden Axe. Dig Dug, just because that's an iconic old game that you played.
And we had it at home on the Atari 5200.
There's some people that I know today, like their kids, like their parents got them into playing Dig Dug. And like they, you ask them, like, what's your favorite game? And they say Dig Dug. Yeah, even really? Compared to their,
the new,
you know,
games now, Fortnite, yeah, their or Switch any other
and all this other stuff, they'll still say Dig Dug, yeah, their favorite. It's such a fun game, man.
Oh, yeah. On that note, I've, and you've probably done this too, introduced kids to these old games, and they're like, these are fun.
They are fun, yeah. They're, well, like Alex, your son, yeah, was over there playing on Lee Bachman's,
yeah,
game. He likes Dig Dug. Yeah, he was telling me the other day when we saw him at Comic-Con, he was like, yep, I still hold the high-ranking score on whatever game, yes, it was. And
yeah, I forgot, I was like, what game it was.
Good for you, man. Oh, 1942,
yes.
Which is a great game.
Oh, yeah.
But so speaking of arcade games really quick, do you remember, and I don't remember the name of this, that's what I'm asking you, hopefully, but there was a TV show back in the day that it was like a game show of arcade games, and kids would be like trivia questions.
Okay.
They would ask trivia questions, and then they would have to go and play different video games and stuff, and like beat certain levels and all this stuff. Okay. And it would be timed, and it was like beat the level, or I think it was like to see how many points you could get. And it was like kind of like, you know, this kid versus this kid kind of a, okay, thing. And it would start off with like, I think, four people, and then it would dwindle down to two or whatever. And then it would, at the end, those two would like rack up points against each other. And it would be like this gauntlet of games that they would have to play.
Oh.
And
I don't remember the name of that.
I don't remember. Does it ring a bell at all, though? Do you remember watching this game? Like, I
oh, gosh.
It wasn't on very long. It was maybe 1 year. And I just remember just being enthralled by that. I was like, I want to be.
Because you got to watch people.
Yeah. I was like, this is the best thing ever. Like, you're playing up against other kids. You know, and it was
watching people play video games, kind of like YouTubers now.
Exactly.
Watching people play video games.
It was
games.
So cool because it was like you had to be good at Pac-Man. You had to be good at Burger Time. You had to be good at whatever and stuff. And
kind of rings a bell a little bit, but
I'd have to look it up.
I'd have to look it up.
It was so fun,
I'm sure if I saw it, I'd probably recognize it. Do you think it was on network TV or on like Nickelodeon?
I think it was on like Nickelodeon or something. It was probably
sounds like a Nick game.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Either way, it was. I just wanted to be that.
You wanted
so
to be
bad.
That guy.
I wanted to be that so
playing
bad.
Burger Time or Outrun or
that. I want to be on the Bozo the Clown show.
Well, last one I had honorable mention was Dragon's Lair, just because it was so unique at the time.
Oh man,
so hard,
dude. I thought that was like I know it was a cartoon, but to me, I was like, it was like we were going into real life with that. You know,
it was kind of the first VR.
Right. It
for
was.
Us. And it was on Laserdisc. Two Laserdiscs is what they
is
had.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Okay. That's
how.
Yeah,
two Laserdiscs inside the cabinet there. That's why it was 50 cents to play.
And that's why it took so long to play.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's like you would do something and then you have to sit and wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
probably
Laserdisc.
Why. It's probably loading.
That's what it was. It was a Laserdisc. You just have to sit there and wait.
Like, okay. For you, if a listener, if you don't know what Laserdisc was, it was basically a giant CD.
Yeah.
Size of a record. Yeah. But before, because it took that much space just to hold that much data back then.
But it was a ton of data. And then the processors on those things were so small. So it was like, it had to take in a lot of data and really process it out and figure it out. And then it would display this amazingness on the screen.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like worth it, you know, but it really disrupted gameplay.
Oh,
though,
it did. Visually amazing, but gameplay wise, difficult
it was
and slow.
Yeah. It was way above before their time.
It was,
way before their time. But I remember playing that at Showbiz. And that was like the first time that I actually saw my dad be like, oh, you know, like he wanted to play it. He was like, I want to see this, you know? So he tried playing it and stuff, but
it's a frustrating game.
Frustrating game.
But just
man, it looked cool though.
Caught your eye every time.
Yeah. Looks
every
so
time.
Cool.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
Yes.
It's been a fun ride down memory lane, and go get some Bigly Chew after this and maybe an Icy or whatever you got at 7-Eleven.
We're going to hit Godfather's.
That's
what we're
going to
do.
Go.
We're going to leave
that's
here.
Where
we're
going
to hit Godfather's. That's where, it all started.
Cool. Well, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me on.
And go to covertnerd.net to find all the show notes. And again, I'll put a link to the Make You Turn Your Great Again podcast. So check out Jeff's podcast too.